Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Bad News when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton just outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now I'm paid weekly, he said, for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? Now, we are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program, this New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists and these philosophers and preachers and politicians. Now let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's the place to start. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. All right, last time we took a look at some really bad news. That's the impending war with Iraq. I say bad news. You know, the average Joe Sixpack sits over here and says, well, we'll just go over there and nuke them. Boys and girls, when we go over there and nuke them, I don't think you're thinking ahead to the ramifications of what comes next. You know? About, 60% of the oil that we consume here in the United States comes from outside our borders. That's the bad news. The good news is, 75% of the oil we use in this country comes from North America. God love you Canadians. You know that? I mean, if we didn't have somebody over there to support us, you know, Canadians and Englishmen and Germans and South Koreans and all you people around the world supporting us, we would literally starve to death. Half the food that we eat in the United States, half the food that we buy in our supermarkets, not the food that we're loading on ships and sending overseas. I mean, the food that we're buying right out of our supermarkets today, half of that comes from outside our borders. That ought to scare the living hell out of every American drawn breath. It doesn't, but it ought to. And there's something to be said about this impending economic catastrophe that's about to envelop the world. And it's not just going to be the Americans that go down. So, you know, we can take solace in the fact that you Chinese are going to take a hit just like we are. Now, the thing that's getting to be scary over here is, well, how are the Chinese going to react to this when they find out that we just stiffed them? Now, my experience has been in life that when somebody finds out that he's just been screwed, he gets angry. I don't know what happens when nations, you know, whole governments, you know, find out that they've been stiffed. You know, it could cause some real hard feelings. Now, you know, if the United States needed to go to war against a country like Iran, you know, if you're going to bet, you know, I'd be betting on the United States. I don't doubt that. And if the United States was going to go to war against North Korea, I'd bet on the United States, each and every time. But the United States is hated around the world. We're hated everywhere. And it doesn't have very much to do with people in the world envying your democracy and your high standard of living. That's the cover story. Cover story. What these people dislike is you ain't paying them. That's the bottom line. You're living way beyond your means, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. And the people that are around the world are sitting over there and they're unable to cash their dollars. They're unable to buy the things that they want to buy. For instance, the Chinese, they wanted to buy the Union Oil Company here in the United States. They had the money. I think it was about $20 billion or something, a little under that. So they said, well, you know, we've sent you the big screen TVs and we've sent you the tennis shoes. Now it's time for you to give us something we want, and what we'd like to have is an oil company. And so the United States Congress went into executive session and said, oh, no, that's off limits. You know, you Chinese can sell us big screen TVs and tennis shoes, but when you get ready to buy something, all you can buy is Disneyland T-shirts. Oh. You know, let's picture it this way. What if you were working for me and I said, well, I'm not going to pay you with U.S. dollars. I'm going to pay you with George Gordon 3x5 cards, which are redeemable over here in the George Gordon store for Disneyland T-shirts. And you might say, well, that's good. I'd like to have some Disneyland T-shirts, but I'd also like to have some gas for my car. And I'd also like to eat in a restaurant. And can I use these 3x5 cards for restaurant tickets? Nope, no, you can't. Can I buy anything other than Disneyland T-shirts? No. Boys and girls, that ain't going to fly very well here pretty shortly. Now, so far, the United States has been browbeating everybody in the world. I showed you that in the last program. I said, everybody in the world is taking U.S. dollars for their oil. They're taking U.S. dollars for what we buy in South Korea and Formosa and Japan. Not because they want U.S. dollars, but because they're afraid to stand up to us. We are the big bully on the block. And there's just no two ways about it. Hell, even the Chinese and the Russians can see that when push comes to shove, you want to take a look at U.S. military power, you Russians? You know, wake up and smell the coffee. The Chinese, wake up and smell the coffee. Now, if we're going to do a war with China, I'd bet on the United States. You want to do a war with Russia? I'm going to bet on the United States. You want to bet on a war with the whole world, with one arm tied behind our back and an economy that's dysfunctional? I'm going to bet on the world. No, the United States is tough, but we're not invincible. In fact, there's a couple of statements in the Bible about that. Our God told us through, we got a prophet by the name of Jeremiah. He said, you trust in your high towers. High towers, that's a euphemism in Bible-ese that's talking about your military, talking about your army. You know, you Americans, you think your army is absolutely invincible. It is a tough nut to crack. No doubt about that. If the United States Army goes up against the Iraqis, God help you Iraqis now. Have you been watching this thing for the last 5 years? I mean, you got, I think it's 2 or 3 million, or maybe 4 million Iraqis displaced now outside the country. I mean, you got 1 million dead. Hey, wake up here again. You know, hey, you Iranians over there, you sure you want to take us on? This is going to be one bloodbath like you have never seen before. You think that war with the Iraqis over there now was a bloodbath? You ain't seen it yet. But if you think the United States is going to launch a military invasion of Iran and teach them Iranians a lesson, I think we got another guest coming. No. There's a newsletter here that I've been telling you about. It's called The Privateer. This guy, his name is Bill Buckley. He has a knack for putting the story into context and putting it on a page like nobody I've ever read. I mean, this guy has got his head on straight. If I had to take this analysis from The Privateer and measure it against George Bush, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Barack Obama, and John McCain, I'd pick this guy Buckler against those five clowns any day of the week. So I'm going to recommend that you subscribe here again to The Privateer for your own benefit, not for me. I don't get paid anything. Hell, in fact, you'd be best served if you didn't mention the name George Gordon in connection with this Privateer, because the last time I got a communication from Buckler, it was thanks but no thanks, butt out, and I don't care much for you, which is understandable because, you know, I'm kind of controversial and I don't deny it. And normal people don't have anything to do with me. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to have anything to do with him. I think this guy's got his head on straight, and I thought I'd pass this on. He's the guy, remember, that just told us about the Royal Bank of Scotland. The BIS, that's the Bank for International Settlements, and Morgan Stanley, that are all predicting now that we're about to have a meltdown in the international stock markets. And so he explains why. It doesn't have anything to do with nuclear weapons in Iran. That's the cover story. It has to do with the Iranians throwing the gauntlet down over gold. The Iranians said, we ain't taking your damn U.S. dollars. Now, I don't blame you Iranians. Hell, I wouldn't take those U.S. dollars. I've been out of U.S. dollars since 2000. I don't take U.S. dollars here either. Here in this law school, we do not take U.S. Federal Reserve note dollars. Absolutely, we'll take them. So I don't blame you Canadians up there. If you said, we're not going to take your U.S. dollars, you Canadians would be using your heads. You're not going to get paid. Rest assured, none of you people out there in the world are ever going to get paid what we owe. You're going to get every dollar we owe, but those dollars we give you aren't going to buy anything, because they're going to be hyperinflated dollars. And that's the bad news. I said I'm going to deliver you the bad news. Let me give you a little bit more. There's a story that came out of the International Forecaster. I'm going to shift over here now to the International Forecaster again. This is the June 25th issue, 2008. Just came out Wednesday, which to you people there, that was yesterday. And so I'm reading the June 25th issue of the international forecaster. Now listen to this. The neocons do not have the manpower to put forces on the ground in an attack against Iran. What good would they do against 70 million Iranians? Thus, any attack by air and sea on Iran would target nuclear facilities, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and the infrastructure. Such an attack would make Iran economically non-functional. Such an attack would earn U.S. Illuminists the enmity of the world. The chances of an Israeli attack on nuclear installations and military targets is even money, and retaliation by Iran will bring the United States into the fray, whose job it will be to turn Iran into a parking lot with a maximum amount of casualties. Oh my God, that's why I said to you people in Iran, you know, we're listened to around the world. We have a lot of listeners in Iran. All right, so you people that are living in Iran, all bottom feeders, I'm sure, you need to be taking preparations for this. I don't know what the hell's going to happen to your capital city of Tehran. I mean, you may have a 20 megaton nuclear weapon dropped on your capital city. It's pretty obvious that we can't drop a ground army over there and attack the Iranians over there. I mean, hell, you'd clean our clock, and we know that. We're not dumb people over here in America. Our military over here, you know, is they're made up of the best and brightest. These guys that are running that war in Iraq, these are professionals. And if you Americans think that this Iraq war over here is going badly, that's not true at all. The Iraq war is going like clockwork. The Iraq war, when you compare the casualties that we're suffering in Iraq with the amount of damage that we're inflicting on the enemy, there's never been a war like this before. I mean, we're just eating your guys' lunch. There isn't even a contest. I know we watch the Lair News Hour, and they show us these 10 or 11 Americans that are killed every week. You know, they'll have their pictures up there. Hell, if you take a look at the number of people killed in Iraq in 5 years, it's 4,000. Hell, it killed more than that before lunch on Omaha Beach. There were three battles in World War I in which they killed 40,000 people in one day. That's just on the Allied side. I don't know how many Germans were killed. I'm assuming the same number. God, that's 80,000 people killed on the battlefield, one battlefield in one day. I mean, when you're taking a look at the modality and the methodology being used to wage war in Iraq, this is the most sophisticated technological war in the history of mankind, with the fewest American casualties ever suffered in any war that we've ever fought. You know, take a look at the proportions of the amount of time, compare that to Vietnam. Well, in Vietnam, we killed 58,000 soldiers over there in 10 years, 5,800 a year. Hell, we ain't killed 5,800 in 5 years of war over in Iraq. So, I mean, you know, take your hat off to George Bush and the military here in America. I mean, you know, we're not a bunch of in the backyard stumble bums, you know, fighting a barroom brawl. I mean, these are very, very knowledgeable paid professionals. But, you know, we don't have the wherewithal to take on everybody in the world all at the same time. I mean, we're tough. And we take on any one, including the Chinese or the Russians. Now, that's the tragedy that I see coming down here in Iran. And that's what's being pointed out here. How do you know where the Chinese and the Russians are going to come down on this Iranian deal? See, in the background over here, you got this Battle of Armageddon coming down. Hey, listen, you know, you can be the toughest guy in the bar, but you know, even the toughest guy in the bar, the meanest, nastiest, baddest guy in the bar, if he's got any sense at all, doesn't take on everybody in the bar. I mean, he just takes on one guy at a time. Takes him out in the alley, cleans him out, and then comes back into the bar and says, anybody else got a bitch with me? And, no, 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 nobody does. And so, okay, now we can go get back to drinking. Now, I'm not sure that that's the way this deal is going to come down over here in Iraq. Now, the chances of an Israeli attack on nuclear installations and military targets is even money, and retaliation by Iran will bring in the U.S. military, whose job it will be to turn Iran into a parking lot. And you can rest assured that's what we're going to do. The big question will be for both Israel and the United States, will they have to deal with Russia and China in the process? Will we have World War III? Now, the Chinese and the Russians, you know, they've got some pretty strong ties there with the Iranians. And the Russians and the Chinese for the last 10 or 15 years have been sitting back and shutting up. I mean, they've been, you know, getting into some kind of an argument here with the biggest, baddest bully in the bar. But, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, the Soviet Union, or Russia, we call it today, you know, the old Soviet Union, you know, you need to understand, boys and girls, those guys still have all those nuclear submarines out there with all those nuclear weapons on. I mean, even if you can go out here and whip these guys, you're going to get hurt real bad in the process. I mean, if you think that you're going to take on Russia and you're not going to get any nukes dropped on New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or Miami Beach, I mean, I think we've all got a rude awakening kind of. It doesn't happen in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, but I'm afraid that this ain't Mr. Rogers' neighborhood coming down, boys and girls. We ain't talking about Bert and Ernie here. I think that if I was going to bet on a war between the United States and Russia, it's kind of like 1905, Japan had a war. It was called the Russo-Japanese War. And the Russians and the Japanese went at it, and then when the smoke cleared, the Japanese just cleaned the Russians' clock. I mean, they just wiped them out. And I'm sitting here saying, you know, if I was going to bet on the United States and Russia having a war, you know, I'd be betting on the United States. But hey, listen, the Japanese lost some ships too, you know. You know, there were some casualties on both sides. I mean, the Japanese got a big bloody nose and two black eyes out of that war. I mean, it is true when it was all said and done, the Russians got the worst end of it. So you need to understand that when you get involved in a war, it's kind of like Iraq. I mean, you know, the United States is over there cleaning everybody's clock, but you know, we're getting bloodied over there. Economically, we have been bloodied. And everybody in the world can see that. And that's where the Chinese come in. See, the Chinese, they've been watching us, and they said, you know, one of their top generals said, you know, we can't take you people on militarily, eyeball to eyeball. So what we're going to do is we're going to bide our time until you people are so weak that when we strike, you won't know what happened. So I've been mentioning that to you Australians down there. When this thing comes to a head, you know, Australia's toast. It's the nuclear umbrella that the United States has over you Canadians and you Europeans and you Australians out there that keeps the Chinese off your backs and the Russians. Once that's removed, and that's about to be removed when the United States goes down the tubes economically. See, your military is dependent upon raw materials coming into the country, and this geostrategic, this geopolitical world trade trick, you know, that we've been using for the last 50 years. I don't know if you're aware of this, but here in the United States, we could not build an aircraft carrier in this country today. I know you're sitting there and you're saying, my God, you got to be joking. No, I'm not joking. You cannot build an aircraft carrier in the United States of America today. And that's because much of, for instance, the anchors, you know, an aircraft carrier needs an anchor, you know, like you need another thumb, but they typically stick them up there, you know, if nothing else, for hood ornaments. But the moral to the story is that there isn't a foundry in the United States of America that could cast an anchor for one of those ships. We don't have any foundry capacity here. It's all been exported to Japan. So your anchors have to come from Japan. Now, you take a look at some of the vital machinery that's going to go into this aircraft carrier. It's going to come from Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, Germany. You know, you don't have enough of the vital strategic machine tools in America to turn out the parts for the ship that come from overseas. You couldn't build an airliner in the United States of America. The engines come from Britain and the tail sections from Singapore. It's just assembled in Seattle. I don't know if you understood that or not. America, the arsenal of democracy in World War II. We made all of those airplanes, all of those ships, we made them here in America and then shipped them over to the Russians and shipped them to the Chinese to fight the Japs. That ain't going to happen the next round. Now, there's a Bible prophecy that talks about this thing of an embargo. An embargo. Doesn't use that term in the Bible, but it's the same thing. And it's going to be called a siege in the Bible. It's called a siege. And when this siege comes down around America, that's an embargo. That's when the Arabs finally say, we ain't shipping any more oil to you. Boys and girls, your military machine is going to grind to a halt, right along with everything else. When the Japanese and the Chinese and the South Koreans and Formosans say, we're not shipping another ton of steel to the United States, oh, that's going to be bad news. Bad news. See, you don't have a steel-making capacity in the United States to satisfy your needs. I remember when I was a kid, there was, if I remember this right, I think it was 21 or 22 steel mills in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Today, there's none. Zero. Zilch. None. Pittsburgh, Steel City of America. Boys and girls, you have offshored, you have outsourced, you have shipped your steel industry to South Korea, Japan, Formosa, and China. That was a geopolitical tragedy. That was bad news beyond description. For the ultimate long-term survivability of the United States of America, shipping your heavy industry to China was the kiss of death. But boys and girls, the bad news is it's already been shipped out. It's gone. It's not here. That doesn't mean there aren't a few steel mills left in the United States, but for the number of steel mills in this country and the amount of steel that we need to be a viable world economic power, I mean, you know, you're just whistling Dixie in the dark. Same thing with oil. Same thing with aircraft. See, in 1950, America was the number one producer and consumer of the top 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. You know what that means? Let me explain it. In 1950, we Americans produced 100 million tons of steel. 100 million tons. All the rest of the world combined produced something less than half of that. We Americans that year produced 3.5 million automobiles. 1950, 3.5 million cars produced in America. All the rest of the world combined produced 750,000, less than 1 million. Same thing was true in aluminum production and coal production. Now, in 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production, America was number one in all 15. Today, America is not number one in any of those 15. Not a single one. None. We were independent in food production and shipping food to everybody else in the world. Today, America is a net importer of food. Net importer of food. You know, I did a series of programs here the other day. America, the richest nation in the world. Young woman, remember I reported to you, said, you know, America's the richest nation in the world, and we have a right to health care insurance. I said, you people have your heads up your hineys. America is not the richest nation in the world. We're one of the poorest. We're in debt. Debt is not wealth, Mr. Rogers. Hey, Big Bird, debt isn't wealth. That's why I keep telling you, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, I'm not going to change America's industrial position in the world. I'm just a bystander like you and everybody else. And it's going to impact upon me, whether I like it or not. If I had my druthers, I'd like to avoid this great last battle of Armageddon, if I had my druthers. But, you know, here I am on planet Earth, just like you and everybody else. And events are transpiring here that don't bode well for avoiding Armageddon. Now, America's got one card left. It's the military option against Iran. And you Iranians over there threw down the gauntlet. Okay. You know, when you're sitting at the bar and you stick your finger under that big bed, nasty, drunk, the big bully in the bar, you know, the big bully, you know, he's got to take you on now. Well, it's either that or he's got to sit down and shut up, you know, like a pussy, you know. Is he going to do that? I don't know. I don't know if George Bush is going to take this line down. I'm sitting here saying I don't think he is. Guys, you know, working on the last 9 months of his presidency over here, I'm not sure this guy's going to leave office. Did you see what just happened over here in Rhodesia? Mugabe, who was about to lose the election, said, well, you know, I'm just going to appoint myself for life, and what are you going to do about it? And if George Bush just wakes up one morning and says, I'm just appointing myself president for life, declaring martial law, and what are you going to do about it? Hey, what are you going to do about it? All you farmers up in North Dakota, huh? You going to form a trackercade and march on Washington, are you? All right. So let's wake up and smell the coffee here, because you're living on the planet just like I am. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here. I'm not up to the bad news yet. I'm just getting you ready. And when we get to the bad news here, which I'm going to drop on you here in a minute, if it doesn't make you cry, it ought to. But let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the bad news, bad international geopolitical and geostrategic news. And right now I'm taking some copy here from the International Forecaster. It's the Wednesday, June 25th, 2008. Now, this is the last one out as I speak. I'm on page 6, and I just told you the same story that we got yesterday when I gave you the report on the privateer, telling you that we've got a meltdown coming in the stock markets, but it's worse than that. This meltdown in the stock markets is probably going to be triggered by the American attack or the Israeli attack on Iran. And remember, the attack on Iran now has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. That's the cover story. It has to do with gold, G-O-L-D. It's all money. It's all economics. Now, after the United States took over Afghanistan in 2001, an explosion of opium and hashish flooded the Russian Confederation. The Taliban had ended opium production, and the U.S. and Britain took Afghanistan to where now the supply 93% of the world's heroin. Hold it right there, boys and girls. Did you catch that number? 93% of the world's heroin comes from Afghanistan. And Afghanistan was producing virtually zero heroin in 2000 and 2001. 2002, we launched our attack against the Taliban, took over Afghanistan, and today it's the world's number one heroin producer, which is where Afghanistan was before the Taliban came. Now, of course, for your public consumption, 9/11 and then the war in Afghanistan are synonymous terms. The reason that we're in Afghanistan fighting is so that we can find Osama bin Laden, who attacked the Twin Towers in New York. That's the cover story. The real story is the Twin Towers attack in New York was handled by our CIA and our Air Force, and it was a false flag job, and it was for the purposes of getting the American public behind a war in Afghanistan so that we could go after Osama bin Laden, which is the cover story, so that we could reestablish the opium trade, which is where the money's at. So if you're deluded into believing that we're in Afghanistan avenging 3,000 Americans killed in the Trade Center attack, that's got your head up the wrong end here again. Now, by now, nearly everybody in America has seen the videos and has seen the response on the 9/11 attack and how that was a false flag operation. So I don't think I'm telling any of you people out there anything new. But geostrategically, what's the purpose for the Trade Towers attacks? Why would George Bush and company want to do such a thing? So that they could reestablish the heroin traffic. The Taliban had knocked it out. The Taliban are a bunch of religious kooks. They're opposed to drugs. So they wiped out drugs in Afghanistan. The biggest fortunes in the world were made in the drug trade in Britain and the United States through the 17th, 18th, and 19th and 20th centuries. The hell do you think the British were occupying Pakistan, India, and Afghanistan for? Huh? So that we could bring democracy to the Indians and Pakistanis? Huh? I mean, come on, Mr. Rogers. Hey, Mr. Rogers, wake up. Big Bird and Ernie. All right, so 93%. Now, we've reestablished the opium trade. The heroin trade is back in operation. You're never going to leave Afghanistan. We have to stay there with military bases. We have to stay in Iraq with military bases so that we can maintain the economic status quo. We have to take your oil. No, nothing personal with you Iraqis. Nothing personal. But we need your oil, and we're going to take it away from you. We're the big kids on the block, and that's the way that deal comes down. Now, going on, the supervised production and distribution and that made colossal profits, something that the Illuminists have been doing for centuries, and it has been the basis for most of their power and wealth. It is particularly galling for Americans when U.S. military transport planes are used to transport these drugs to Kyrgyzstan and Turkey. The CIA and the U.S. military buy the drugs from the local Afghan officials who deal with field commanders who are supposed to be eradicating the opium. Leaders in the drug business are President Karzai and his two brothers, Kajim and Ahmed. Valley Karzai, government officials, the U.S. and U.K. military, and the CIA and MI6 run the drug trade and the local government in Afghanistan. The $4 billion U.S. government drug program is a joke. It's a farce, just like it was 4 years ago in Southeast Asia when we were fighting to make Southeast Asia safe from communism. The CIA is organizing caravans to haul drugs across Afghanistan into Russia and Europe. Anglo-American Illuminists have turned Afghanistan into a narco state to fill the coffers of Western European, British, and U.S. banks, who, by the way, are the chief entities to launder the proceeds. Where the hell do you think all that money goes? It goes through the banks, boys and girls, because that's where the money's at. All right, now, I laid the foundation. Now let me tell you where the bad news is. On page 7 of the International Forecaster, listen to this paragraph. Due to floods, we have lost 72% of next year's seed corn crop. Hey, Joe, did you hear that? Listen to that statement again, just one sentence. Due to the Midwest floods, we have lost 72% of next year's seed corn crop. I read that sentence and I said, oh my God, that can't be true. Hell, that's worse than war with Iran. That one statement is worse news than if you heard tonight on Katie Couric that the United States dropped a 20-megaton weapon on Tehran, Iran. Boys and girls, that is devastating. That's not all of the bad news. Jesus, Chapman, you could have saved that and put it, you know, that sentence could have been put at the end of the paragraph. As a result, Quaker Oats has closed indefinitely due to the huge silos of grain destroyed by floodwaters. God, talk about a barroom brawl. Here comes Rocky, Kerblowy. He smashes you in the left cheek with a left hook. You're reeling against the ropes. Kerblowy, he now smashes you against the right cheek and breaks your jawbone as you fall to the canvas. 1-2. Let me read that to you again, kids. Due to these floods, we've lost 72% of next year's seed corn crop. God, that's worse than losing 72% of the corn crop. If you'd have said we lost 70% of the corn crop, I'd say that's bad news. When you tell me that we've lost 72% of the seed corn, I tell you, my God. Now, remember, I've been telling you people about famine, haven't I? That's the stuff of which famine's made. You know, if you lose the corn that you've got in your barrel, that's bad. When you lose your seed corn, that's starvation. That's starvation. I'll tell you why here in a minute. And see, most of you people live in the city and you don't understand the seed corn. That seed corn was more valuable than the entire United States corn crop. If you took every ear of corn today and burned it, that's bad news, but that's not catastrophe. When you tell me that we've lost 70% of next year's seed corn, boys and girls, that's the stuff that famine's made of. That's a catastrophe. Hell, the Russians never even gave up their seed in the siege in Stalingrad. They guarded the seed with their lives. They never touched the seed. People were eating grass, bark off of trees, and boiling leather shoes, but they never went out and ate their seed. Hell, we didn't even get to eat it. It's just been destroyed by the flood. General Mills won't be producing for a long time. Cargill's huge grain storage bins have been lost, and the railroad in and out has been lost. Archer Daniels Midland, the world's largest agricultural processors of soybeans, corn, wheat, and cocoa, is totally underwater. And if you can stock up on cereals and anything made from corn, wheat, and soybeans, do it now. Don't wait. Call the freeze-dry guy and get your orders in before there's nothing left. And then he gives the name and number for this freeze-dry guy. Now, I'm not going to recommend that you buy freeze-dried foods. Although it probably is, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here. Freeze-dried foods are very pricey, not nutritionally adequate, and pose several other problems. But, you know, here in America, where most women in America can't cook, it may be the only way you can survive. So let me back off that. You know, maybe you ought to call the freeze-dried guy and start getting some food laid in. Because, you know, if I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If I took the average guy from New York City and gave him a live chicken, he'd make a pet out of the chicken and both of them would starve to death. I mean, the average guy in the city wouldn't have the slightest clue as to what the hell to do with a live chicken. And, you know, the average girl today, you know, she goes to high school, she goes to college. When that girl comes out of college, all she's got on her mind is her career. I mean, that girl can't cook. She wouldn't have a clue as to what to do with a side of beef. How would she preserve it? How would she dry it? How would she can it? So, you know, maybe freeze-dried is the only salvation that you people have out there. The logical thing to do is to get out there in the marketplace right now. If you think rice is a problem, my God, wait until this flood is over. This is just one blurb. I don't even know if this is true. I haven't verified this. I'm just giving it to you. I just read it yesterday. That news is so bad, it is so shocking, that is so devastating. Due to floods, we've lost 72% of next year's seed corn crop. Let me explain this to you. In Leviticus 19:19, going back here to Moses, you know, 3,000 years ago, this is where this problem originates. I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to turn over here to Leviticus 19:19. Here's the statement. It says, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not sow your seed or your sow your field with mingled seed, and neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you." I don't think the average Christian could find that statement in the Bible with both hands and a roadmap, let alone understand the ramifications of it. Middle statement. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Well, boys and girls, we've been doing that in this country now for about 75 years. Mingled seed, that's hybridized seed. It's a bad farming practice. It divorces the farmer from his seed. Seed. Seed isn't the crop. Seed is what produces the crop. You see, for us to have a crop of corn, we have to have seed corn. We have to go out and plow, rake, harrow, disc, prepare seed bed, and then plant that corn, plant that seed. And it's from that seed that the corn crop comes. You put one seed in the ground and it produces one stalk. One stalk has two ears. Each ear has 16 rows, 432 kernels per cob. You get an 87,200% return. It's a great business. I mean, the banking and insurance haven't got anything on farming as it relates to return. I've often said this to my students. What is the one business entity, what is the one business model that has the greatest return? And people will say banking, number one, insurance, number two. Wrong. It's farming, number one, banking, number two, insurance, number three. Farming has an 82,000 or 87,200% return. Banking is good. I'm not criticizing banking. I mean, God, it's terrific. I mean, you know, you're creating money right off the air. But that's still not as good as 87,200%. And that's because there's always a cost of goods. Now, the results of this seed corn over here, you're losing 72% of your seed corn. Can you start to get the picture? You ain't got any seed to put in the field. If you haven't got any seed to plant, if I take that one seed away from you, you ain't going to get a stalk. You ain't going to get anything. See, once you've planted the corn, then the insects come and they eat it up. You still get two cobs. You might not get 436 kernels on each cob, but you get 50 kernels, or 25 kernels, or 10 kernels. Hell, if you only got 10, that's 10 times more than you planted. Well, it's not too shabby. 10 times more. At least you got seed for next year. Boys and girls, when you lost your seed this year, you ain't got any crop next year, and you ain't got any seed for next year or the year after. That is dead. That's DED. That is starvation, which now brings us to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which our God now promises famine. Promises. I mean, he's sitting there saying, "I guarantee it." Sounds like Dolly Parton, you know, "I guarantee it." So, you know, as a bottom feeder, I'm sitting over here saying, well, I got George Bush over here, you know, the meanest, biggest, baddest guy in the world sitting with weapons of mass destruction, you know, on his desk. He's got the button right there. And then you got the Iranians over here. They're telling you, we ain't going to take your dollars. And furthermore, we're going to convert the dollars we got into euros and gold. Now, what are you going to do about that? And then you got this Midwest flood. And here's Quaker Oats. Now, Quaker Oats ain't the biggest, baddest, meanest grain company in the country. But, you know, that it's not George Gordon's grain bin, I'll tell you that. And they're out of business. They're flooded out. Now, listen to this. Due to floods, we've lost 72% of next year's seed corn crop. As a result, Quaker Oats is closed indefinitely. That's due to the huge silos of grain destroyed by floodwaters. They're just closed indefinitely. They're not out of business. They'll be back. You know, as the Terminator said, I'll be back. All right? Quaker will be back. Boy, they ain't going to be back with a whole lot this year. And we don't know when they're coming back with a whole bunch. Hey, we're starting to get into biblical proportions here, kids. That's why I think that this Bank of International Settlements, Morgan Stanley, and the Royal Bank of Scotland, I think we better start paying attention here. I mentioned to you yesterday or day before, I said, you know, I think that $20,000 that you got over there, I don't think I'd want to use that for debt reduction. I think I'd want to get every dollar I could into gold and silver. I think I'd want to get every dollar I could into food. Yeah, it'd be real great, you know, if you could pay all your debts off and come out of this thing debt-free and then get your subsistence and survival program together, that'd just be real peachy keen. But for most of you people, it's way too late. Way too late. You're not going to get ahead of this power curve. You know, you're 300 feet in the air, and the engine's quit. Then you got a 20% angle of attack. God, man, you got to get the nose down. Or crash tail first, I guess. I don't know which is worse. You know, we got to take some action here, and I just thought that I'd spread the word here. Here's the bad news. I mean, you're not listening to this on Katie Kirk. I don't hear anybody telling me that Quaker Oats is closed indefinitely due to floodwaters. I didn't know that Archer Daniels Midland was underwater. Hell, I thought even those guys had been to college and at least asked the question, where's the high water mark here when we go to build? Now I find out that all of these college kids, well, I don't know. Hell, they come out of the cities. You know, with Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, they don't have floods. I've never seen a flood on Big Bird, what do they call that, Sesame Street. I don't think Barney ever deals with flooding. So I guess it isn't surprising that the generation of chief executive officers and directors of boards of directors and the people that are in the offices of our legislatures and so on, they're not thinking about when they go to build buildings that maybe they ought to ask, where was the last high water mark? So they build their office headquarters and build their silos out on the floodplain, and when the flood comes, it destroys all the grain in the silos. Oh, my God. And where's your grain, Bob? Oh, you store your grain in the Archer Daniels Midland silos in Illinois along the Mississippi, huh? George Gordon stores his grain on the George Gordon farm at 1,200 feet above sea level. When my grain bin gets water in it, the rest of you people in the world are already dead. Hey, guys, you know there was a time in America when Americans used to have a pantry. Pantry, that's spelled P-A-N-T-R-Y. We don't build houses with pantries in them anymore. I don't know if you call that the family room or the game room or something else. Maybe it's called the entertainment center. But in the old days, we used to have a pantry. And in our pantries, we used to have the food that we harvested last September, October, and November in jars on the shelf, in barrels. And we stored our grain in our homes. That's where we used to put it. Now, it's in the Quaker Oats silo. It's in the Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland silos, waiting for just-in-time delivery to Walmart and Kroger and Safeway. I got news for you. It ain't going to be there. And that's bad news for all the rest of you people in the world. I got to tell you, there was some hope that maybe we could close down some of these ethanol plants and take that corn and use it to eat. Now, it doesn't make any difference whether you close the ethanol plant or not. The ethanol plant's going to close itself because there ain't going to be any feedstock to run through it anyway. That's bad news. And the worst news is there isn't going to be any corn to eat either. Now, we've been talking about this Leviticus 19:19 in the context of disease. That monoculture would produce a disease that would wipe out the U.S. corn crop. Never occurred to me that we could wipe out the U.S. corn crop, seed crop, and do the same thing. Just goes to show you that this God's thinking all the time. Never entered my mind, not until I read it right here in the forecaster. Now let me give you the international forecaster name and number again. I know that you probably won't be able to get past page 7, but you know you got to get past page 7 here. This is on page 7, by the way. But there's even worse news as you go through the rest of the newsletter. I'm just giving you the highlights of the bad news, boys and girls, and I'm telling you, this does not bode well. So if you're psychologically unable to handle this, I understand. I hear you. I hear you. Boys and girls, I'm 70 years old. I have never read, I've never heard, not in my lifetime have I ever seen anything like this in the United States of America. It has never come to pass in this country.
And if you'd have told me that we're going to see the day when 72% of next year's seed crop is going to be lost to flooding, I'd have said, you got to be out of your mind. These people are farmers. Farmers always store their grain above the high water mark. But evidently, Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, and Quaker Oats are not operated by farmers. They're operated by college graduates with PhDs. And I guess they didn't think to ask when they were building the silos and their office headquarters, where's the high water mark? I know that building contractors don't, but then what the hell? They're just building houses to sell. Homeowners don't ask. They've been watching Barney and Sesame Street and Bert and Ernie and Mr. Rogers, and they don't have floods on Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. This is the International Forecaster. www.theinternationalforecaster.com, all one word. The Privateer. The-privateer.com. Remember, that's www.the-privateer.com. Now, if you don't have a computer and you're driving down the highway and you're listening, can you write this number down? Call the law school, if nothing else. Now, just go to georgegordon.org or call us here at the law school and say, hey, can you give me that name and number for the Privateer and the International Forecaster? We'll do it. International Forecaster, the Privateer. That Privateer number now, 617-5471-1960. That's 617-5471-1960. I got to tell you, it's bad news, boys and girls, but I'm of the opinion that telling you that there's a 300-foot hole down the side of the ship is better for you than telling you to go back to your cabin and have a good evening. You're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's about up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.